listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are on a Thursday before a holiday weekend.
Yes, yeah. Yes, which is always a joy.
Yeah, I think so.
By the way, who are you?
I'm Michael Sterling.
You're Michael Sterling. No, normally you alert people to that fact.
I do. I just kind of...
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Out.
You are Michael Sterling, and I am
not. I think
not.
So. Yeah.
And I am not.
You
yes.
are not. Who are you?
I am Paul Strolley, and I, too, dread a holiday weekend in Los Angeles because, you know, because traffic here just needs a bump. You know, it's not stressful and
right.
angst-producing enough. We really need to have more traffic.
And you know, the 405 giving...
with those closed exits?
With all that stuff,
and
which
you know,
I know one of our guests fights probably every time, frequently going to his play. We're going to talk to him about that a little bit later.
We will. But first, let's thank our sponsor.
Yes, indeed. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services. Ladies and gentlemen, you know them well. The entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listening sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And in studio today, ladies and gentlemen, we are delighted to have two performers whose varied careers have encompassed every aspect of the business we call show. They also happen to be married to one another, so no doubt the mantle over their fireplace runneth over with various accolades from stage, television, and film. Please welcome Maxwell Caulfield and Juliet Mills.
Hello.
Hello.
These people travel with us everywhere, so you'll have to indulge us.
They work cheap. They work cheap. It's so nice to have you, Juliet, in the studio. Maxwell, you, of course.
Yeah, thanks. We feel great to be here, Michael. You're an old pal, and this is Breakdown Services. Where would any of us be without them? Let's face it.
Exactly.
Oh, can you do that as a sound bite for us so we can set that to...
No one would ever work.
I tell you, yeah. Gary Marsh, the guy who created... I worked at Breakdown for about 13 years, and Gary Marsh, the guy who created it, he was sharing the story of how it all started, and he was like 16 years old and just making copies of scripts and going around and putting them under people's doors, and people like, this is really a great service, you should do this.
Well, Mr. Maxwell and Juliet's agent, Bud Moss, was one of the great supporters of Gary Marsh and Breakdown Services.
Oh, that's
very
right. He shared a story
yeah,
last
he did.
Week about that.
He did indeed.
When I used to work at Breakdown, they had a little shirt that they gave us that said Breakdown Services on it, you know, and I was driving north on the 405 and there was a motorcycle that was pulled over. And I ride a motorcycle, so I pulled over to see if the guy needed help, and I just got out and said, everything okay? He goes, oh, no, I just had to make this phone call, and my bike's okay and everything. And he looks at my shirt, he goes, but this is a great service. I didn't know anything about it, because he sees Breakdown Service on my shirt. He thinks I'm an automotive service going in to help broke down cars.
Oh,
I didn't correct him. It would have been too much to explain alongside the 405 in 1,000 degrees, but... But it was a cute
thing. On the side. How was your week, Paul?
My week was good, aside from the fact that I live in Tarzana, and it's the surface of the effing sun where I live.
What is the effing sun?
The effing sun is like the
sun. Is that something that...
More fervently so.
Oh,
the
I
F
see.
Is for fervent.
Oh, actually. It is.
Yes,
well,
yes.
That's
just
good.
Doing something very comforting on the talk radio, suggesting that the weather spell that we've just been enduring here in Southern California is something we should start getting used to.
Mm.
Longer, hotter, drier spells with more humidity, folks.
Yeah, more humidity. Here?
Yeah.
Well, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about such optimistic things about the state of the 405, which actually, frankly, is an amazing feat of engineering, as frustrating as it is at times and hair-raising, some of those on and off ramps that suddenly get shut down on you. What those guys, Caltrans, are doing out there is absolutely extraordinary. And when the 405 is moving, it's the greatest freeway on earth.
Yeah.
We all know what the flip side is.
What day was that?
Right. Exactly. What year was that?
And you know what's interesting? They're mentioning they're doing another one of those Carmageddon things at the end of September where they're closing everything down. And that really...
I was going to say...
You're rolling your eyes,
I'm going to say I'm only rolling because last time it worked flawlessly because everyone was too afraid to go out on the freeway, so everyone did stay home.
Right.
And the rest of us that thought, I'm going to slip out there, did, and it was fantastic, right?
But Julia was just asking me if she should take the 405 to go over to her voiceover agent, CESD. And she'll probably end up taking the Glen, won't you?
Yes. Well, I think there's a problem today with the 405, isn't there?
There's, yeah, every day is a problem there. But, you know.
No, but from here, definitely the Beverly Glen. Because you're right here.
It's so close. And it's a beautiful drive over anyway, so you can't really beat that. Right. Right? Yeah. Might be a little busy because maybe some of the traffic from the 405 gets, you know, kind of over onto the Glen, you think? Maybe they want to avoid the 405?
One. Not that. That's a bit. I think it affects Sepulveda more.
Yeah, could be. But anyhow,
hey, listen, guys, I've got to dive in here. I know you want to got some good leading questions for us, but actually, Carmageddon's coinciding with our last weekend of Helen at the Getty Villa.
Yeah.
So I'm imagining PCH is going to be pretty hectic with everybody who needs to get north. That would normally traverse the aforementioned 405, but will now be booking it up the coast to get, you know, to Oxnard and points north.
Right.
So,
or they can
Topanga.
Go through the Topanga.
Take Topanga.
Topanga's a horror. I recommend Malibu Canyon.
Malibu
day.
Canyon is nice too. Oh, and Las Virgenes all the way down.
Yeah. Now, are we reaching a national audience here?
We are.
We're losing it. They're actually bored witless.
I was thinking exactly the same thing. You're hearing how important traffic is to the people who live here, but to very few else. So let's change the topic, the show to state of traffic.
There we
what do you
go.
Think? State
not,
of traffic.
Not so much.
He's
going to
give
not
the
so
he's going to give a freeway update next. Ridiculous.
Go ahead, Michael. Give a proper intro to
ladies and gentlemen. Get a hold of yourselves now. His success.
Oh, let me do it. I'll do this.
Okay, you do this.
Because you got those cashmere vocal cords.
There you go. They
really? Save those for
Julia.
His success on the New York stage began with his Theatre World Award-winning performance in the 1979 production classic Enemy. He also played opposite Jessica Tandy and Elizabeth Wilson in Salonika, am I correct
Indeed.
With that? At the Public Theatre in New York City, co-starred with Emilia Campbell in Trist. In 1995, he made his Broadway debut in J.B. Priestley's An Inspector Calls and made his West End stage debut in 2007 as Billy Flynn in the long-running London production of Chicago, and then reprised the role on Broadway later that year. His worldwide popularity in film and television began by starring in the motion picture Grease 2 opposite Michelle Pfeiffer, The Boys Next Door with Charlie Sheen, but you can see him live right here in L.A., here to talk about his role in Euripides' Helen, the aforementioned, at the Getty Villa opening September 6th. You like that? September 6th.
Yep.
Please welcome Maxwell Caulfield.
Right on.
Did I read that right, Maxwell?
Great.
I want to make sure I had
you
that
did.
Right.
Play that pocket audience applause one more time.
Oh, sure. Nice. Well, you have two choices. You have that or you have that. So
okay.
It's up to you.
Let's avoid those
that depends
clangers.
On what you say.
Yes.
Maxwell, welcome.
Thanks.
Now, you have just had your dress rehearsal in this amazing play last night, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it went very well, I must say. And I know they always say, well, you know, a great dress rehearsal doesn't presage necessarily a wonderful opening night, but we're going into a weekend of previews. The audience seemed to, our little invited audience last night definitely seemed to go with us last night on the journey. And of course, you can't beat the production values at the Getty Villa. I mean, I tell you, it's worth coming up there just to visit John Paul Getty's amazing vision. But the mayor of Rome just gifted the villa with a 3.5-ton marble statue, one of the most staggering statues I've ever seen in my life, which is a lion attacking the horse. And we're actually incorporating it into our show as a part of the backdrop.
Holy cow.
And as I say, you can't beat what it represents to be in a true Greek amphitheater and have this, as I said, this stunning backdrop, the beautiful climate of Malibu, and actually a half-decent show. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm very, very happy with the way Nick Salamone, who's crafted it, and John Rivera, Lawrence Rivera from Playwrights Arena,
your
who's
director,
directed it.
Yes.
Yeah, they've put a really very amusing show together. There's some fabulous music by David O. And though I say it myself, it's a very strong ensemble. And we've come together with a shared vision that, as I say, based on the reaction last night, seemed to indicate that it's working. Because it's a very ambitious show.
And when Maxwell says it's ambitious, Paul, it's because it's modernized, right? Is that the good word for that? It's modernized. It has a score, as he just said, by David O.
Yeah.
You actually sing. in the show.
I get to sing. I get to do everything. A friend of mine actually came last night. And he said
it's not a musical
good.
Per se.
No,
but it's
no,
a
it
show
isn't.
With music.
Indeed, yeah. He said, "Good. I enjoyed watching you parade around yesterday." So I didn't quite know what, how to take that. But the music is somewhat incidental, although of course it moves the show forward, and obviously it always lends great atmosphere to any piece. But essentially, this added veneer of Hollywood has been added to the classic Greek legend of Helen of Troy.
Oh, wow.
And her purported reunion with Menelaus of Sparta, who obviously kick-started that 10-year war that only concluded with the introduction of the wooden horse, the fabled horse, but involved a lot of carnage over those years.
Right.
And they're now middle-aged, and she was a movie star. And she's sort of been sent into exile in a town called a deserted island called Pharos off the Egyptian coast. And so the audience is called on to be quite imaginative, you know, use their own imagination. But again, with the beautiful villa that behind us.
So the villa is the backdrop of
really
the set.
It really is, yeah.
Effect.
It just you know, you are there, and it's not. But it is done. The costumes are classic. Classical. We're not strutting around in Bermuda shorts or anything. You know? Although I must say, my costume is barely even Speedos.
Well, that's
for the
what
first
I heard.
Half of
now,
the,
explain
well, you
the
just
costume.
Sold half the tickets right there.
Go.
So there you
there
go.
You go.
It's the last vestiges of my flag from the Spartan Armada that I traversed the Mediterranean in search of the world's most beautiful woman. But we've hit a rather rough patch, and we've been lost at sea for years.
So the flag became swimwear.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned the amphitheater. How many does it seat?
It seats 500.
Okay, yeah. So it's still fairly intimate. When you think amphitheater, you don't think.
No,
and you're right on the ocean. I mean, I know. It's spectacular.
Yeah.
What a view.
And you can get a bite to eat there, and they very generously keep the galleries open prior to the show. So for the price of admission, you not only come to the villa and have that opportunity, as I say, to see some extraordinary sculptures and the beautiful Roman villa, that country house, I think is how he terms it, that he had constructed. Didn't live to see its final completion. But the stories of that man's life are unbelievable. He really was a very bizarre character.
Oh yeah, he was Howard Hughes before Howard Hughes.
True.
You know, he
true.
Had that sort of eccentricity. But I want to, before we get to that, I want to touch on something that you said,
yes.
Because I think it's very important, especially given the way we started the hour talking about traffic and things like that.
Right.
I love when events such as this present themselves where you can pitch, where you can have an evening. What you just described, the fact that the galleries are open, the fact that you can get a meal there, the fact that whenever there's any event in Los Angeles where you can park once and walk from this to this and enjoy different things in one evening, I'm all over that, because it's so rare. You know, in New York and Chicago, you can do that all over the place.
Yeah.
We'll take a cab there. There'll be a restaurant right there. We'll eat at the restaurant. We'll walk over to the theater. You don't have that option in LA very often.
Very right.
In Santa Monica, you'll have it. In areas of Pasadena, you'll have it. Some areas of North Hollywood have it. But to have that, not only all combined, but also to be right on PCH, overlooking the ocean, it's a perfect evening.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks. I agree
with you.
Well put.
You know, I agree with you completely. We should
just,
tell
them
about
people.
Tickets. Now, we'll tell them again, of course, before the show is over.
Yeah, we'll definitely send it off.
But tickets can be ordered, ladies and gentlemen, in advance or on the day of your visit. And you simply do that by calling the Getty, 440-7300. And or you can make reservations, by phone. You can certainly go online as well at the Getty web address, which is www.getty.edu.
And we should also stress, because, this is the Getty Villa on PCH. This is not the Getty Museum off of the 405.
That is
this
correct.
Is
yes.
The Getty Villa. And unlike the Getty on the 405, you can drive a hell of a lot closer to it. You don't have to take the tram up there to get to it.
Yeah, the most bizarre thing is, all these years that Juliet and I have lived in Southern California, I assumed that structure on the Pacific Coast Highway was the villa, or a part of it. You know, the one that's very visible.
You see, yeah.
Yeah, right there at the turnoff on coastline. But it actually is just John Paul Getty's neighbor.
Really?
Decided to either horn in on the action, or you know, another,
very interesting,
or that he was there first, building
his
own Romanesque
man's. That sliver right on the road there,
yeah,
on the street.
Yeah, it's a great landmark. Yeah, I know. It's really an education to go.
And there. I think that I for one thought the same thing. So millions of people must have think.
Yeah,
think
really,
this, right?
It is. And actually, you know, what you end up doing is copping to the fact that you never got it together to go see one of LA's great landmarks.
You know what else is down there? Have you seen the tile house down there right off of PCH on the other side?
I can't say I have.
This is fascinating. About maybe two more miles north up PCH, there's a tile house. I'll keep it brief because we're not here to talk. We talk traffic and tiles here at State of the Earth. But it's a guy from the 20s who was a tile salesman, custom painted tiles. And his entire home is his catalog. So you can go to this home and you can go from bedroom to bathroom to kitchen and see the most ornate tile displays you've ever seen. And that's what he would do. He would bring vendors there and they would walk through beautiful rugs that are not rugs. They're just tile, like mosaic tiles that are painted like rugs. And one of the most beautiful things is he had to move his wife's potting shed. His wife's potting shed was right on the water. And he had to move it because of the way they expanded the building. Mm-hmm. So he moved her potting shed behind the house and then replicated the entire view of the ocean in mosaic tile. That's really fascinating.
That
it's a great place to take people.
So people can go
but don't do that
after
this weekend.
They go to the
after
Getty
they
Villa
go
to see
the Getty
Helen,
Villa to see
starring Maxwell
Euripides Helen. Do that.
And you know, folks, Helen, as we said earlier at the beginning of the show, it opens September 6th and it plays through the 29th. At 8 p.m. Previews are this weekend, and you can catch one of those if you're fast enough, and that will go through September 1st.
And it's, once again, it's getty.edu, not .com.
Indeed, Getty. Or by calling 310-440-7300.
Oh, okay, I'm looking at a different number.
Yeah.
I was looking at 7305.
Yep.
So, yes, in terms of what you mentioned earlier with John Paul Getty being a rather eccentric character, I remember I think it was about 15 or so when his son, because I know it was his grandson that got kidnapped.
Yeah.
And then that same grandson didn't he have a stroke later? He had
a very sad story. Yeah.
Yeah.
He ended his life in a wheelchair.
Yeah. He
didn't have enough happen to him. It was very rough. But
Getty
had some heavy karma.
Yeah.
You know, he was married many times. I've been blessed to be married to the same woman for it's crested 3 decades. And she's been just a fantastic support throughout my career. I mean, I think she's had to bite the bullet a few times, but we're still going really strong. And Juliet's coming to see a preview this Saturday. She'll give me my notes prior to the press opening on the 5th of September, and then you can all read the verdict online or in the LA Times or whatever outlet you choose to get your updates from on the 6th and shortly thereafter. But tickets are going fast. Saturdays are very tricky to get into. The Getty has a policy of holding back Saturday ticket sales because they tend to go quickest. And the Thursday, to encourage people to come on a Thursday or a Friday, because it really is only 3 shows a week. I mean, it's to some degree, it's glorified summer stock. But at the same time, the Getty organization really pushed the boat out. They've given us a wonderful budget, Playwrights Arena, to work with. And I must say, John Lawrence Rivera is spending every dime of it. A beautiful light show. I've been raving about that to Juliet on a nightly basis. We've been teching forever because we can only tech after the sun goes down.
Oh, okay.
So this has been a very drawn out process. Because of the mandate at the villa that everyone to cooperate with the neighbors, who never even wanted the amphitheater built in the first place. Everyone has to be off site by 10 p.m. So our tech crew have to convene at a Taco Bell on Sunset Boulevard for John to pass on his notes and get feedback from his various department heads.
Oh my God!
We slide on out of there. And
that's far more guerrilla than you would expect the Getty to be.
Yeah.
You know, you expect people to Getty. You expect people to be sitting in wing chairs and just discussing these things
in the library
with the brandies in their hands. It's like, no, I'll have the black bean taco and
Really.
But Taco Bells have been redone recently, so maybe it's not so bad.
Yes, because you're a fan of Taco Bell.
Well, no, I mean, I happened to stop in.
I ate a Taco Bell. It was not only delicious, but my coat had never been glossier. Let me just tell you.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
there you go. Oh, I missed that little chihuahua, actually.
Maxwell, you've had an amazing career, not only in the theater, but in motion pictures and television, certainly on some of the most iconic television shows ever in the history of television.
Yeah, it served me very well. Thank you, Michael. That run of shows I got to do in the mid-80s for Dynasty and the Colbys was great because it basically got me on the lists of the foreign film distributors because the show was obviously syndicated worldwide. And I got to ride that train for quite a while, the low-budge movie scene out in, a lot of which were made out in Eastern Europe. I don't think there's a single one of those countries I haven't been to, Bulgaria and Lithuania and Romania. And it's interesting to leave these shores and go and see, frankly, how the other half live. It's, you realize how privileged a lifestyle we enjoy here in the mm-hmm. U.S. and specifically California with our climate, but you meet people who are just doing the very best with what they have and having a good spirit and overcoming, in the case of like Romania, a very oppressive dictatorship. Wow. Or the iron grip of the Soviet Union that dominated for so many years, and you work with the crews who are very enthusiastic, but honestly, I mean, they're practically paying them in cups of grain and potato vodka. And I exaggerate, obviously, but just it's always great to work. It's great for one's morale. I know you're probably got a lot of actors listening to you, and you have to ride out those fallow periods because they are quite soul-destroying. And even though Breakdown Services, that we've alluded to already today, do a fantastic job in terms of circulating the jobs available in town, it's amazing how many times you have to jump through the hoop to land the next gig. I mean, I have a diabolical record with auditions. Juliet's far more successful. She gets far less auditions than me and tends to get at least one in three. And she's... her batting average is superb, but I'd be completely counted out if I hadn't done these shows back in the 80s that then led to the run of straight-to-video movies. Yeah. But, Michael, I know you're more inclined to talk about the successes and Broadway you alluded to, and I must say that's everything that it's cracked up to be. To making the half on the Great White Way and feel that buzz of the throng of the theater goers around Times Square, and that knowledge that at 8 p.m. the curtain's going up on so many fantastic venues in such a limited area is a collective energy, and it's just a rush, a complete rush.
And I know you must have had a fantastic, experience in one of the great shows on Broadway, Chicago, and you played Billy Flynn.
That's a dream role for any guy. You just stroll around in a tuxedo, surrounded by women in black lingerie and white feather boas cooing over you, and it's not a bad gig, though I say it myself.
So let me ask you something, and Paul, you might chime in on this too. I mean, Paul is a wonderful actor, by the way, and he's had a very big success with a one-man show in this country called Renaissance Geek originally, and then Straight Up with a Twist. How many performances? 2,200 of it?
No, 1,600.
1,600 performances of it so far.
Never want to see the inside of a hotel room ever again. It's magical, and then you're sitting in Scranton at a diner with a waitress with fresh stitches in her head. It's just like, this is not what I signed up for.
My point is, where is your heart when it comes to being an actor? Is it on the stage?
Thanks.
Is it in television? Is it in a motion picture?
The actor's dream is to bop between the three media. Because very often you need the work the revenue work in front of the camera generates to subsidize your theatrical endeavors. I mean, the reality of it is that to produce theater these days is inordinately expensive. I mean, I'm sure the Getty organization is subsidizing our seat prices, probably to the tune of the same again, a whole 100% on what the audience are being charged, because it just is very, very expensive to produce and then promote. Half the other half of the job, as you know, is to get the word out there, and we've got these banners up and down all the major boulevards here in LA, and it's I'm sure that doesn't come cheap, and they've even taken out ads on the backs of buses, I hear.
I would also say that in Los Angeles it's more than half the job in terms of getting people out.
Here in
I
this said, town?
Yeah,
oh, my
because
Lord.
Getting people to get back in that car and go out, you know, well, after being in that car all day, I think that's a heroic task.
yeah, right.
And that's why I mentioned what I mentioned earlier, because if that's something that people can attend and pitch the evening rather than just the play, that's really what you should go, you know.
Oh, and I agree with you completely. You know? I think it's a fantastic
way. Well, that's
way.
Exactly what they do at your club. Michael has a supper club, Sterling's upstairs at the Federal on
Lancashire,
yeah, right,
North
Portel.
Yeah,
right, right.
Beautiful.
And that's exactly that. Dinner and a show. Dinner and a show, man. Bring it back.
Did that.
We want to continue to talk to Maxwell and obviously Juliet as we get to the second part of our hour, but we should touch on our arts calendar and pay the bills with that.
Sure.
If you don't mind, Michael, I will kick it off.
Absolutely.
And if you will lead us in our little sweepstakes.
I will. Time again.
In the spring of 1994, two outcast teens made a pact to die happy, see Nirvana at the Hollywood Bowl, then jump off the 101 overpass together. But a first kiss, a restraining order, and Kurt Cobain's declining health threatened their plans. This grunge rock fueled love story was named to the Tracking Board's Young and Hungry list, a rock of the top 100 buzzworthy scripts of 2012. Say that three times fast, huh? Neil Patrick Stewart directs this highly physical production, full of rhythm and angst, melodies and epiphanies, and the voice of a generation in pain. Shiner opens September 14th at the Working Stage Theater in West Hollywood.
And it is time again, ladies and gentlemen, for our State of the Art sweepstakes, sponsored by Breakdown Services. Each week, we raffle off a different prize to a fan of State of the Arts.
I just thought we needed music. We needed theme music for that, so I just dropped
that. Play that whole song.
No, that's a tease, isn't it? Sorry, Michael, I didn't mean to interrupt
you. It's okay, I just about had a heart attack. All right. The prizes are furnished by Breakdown Services and include a free yearly subscriptions, actually, to Casting About, casting agent directories, free video uploads for actors, headshot retouching, even a free year of unlimited submissions on Actors Access. And to enter, all you have to do is like us on our Facebook page by visiting facebook.com/stateoftheartsLA. So, Paul, who is the big winner this week?
Well, round and round she goes, Michael. We'll see who we have this week. It is James Giordano from Los Angeles, California. He will receive unlimited submissions on Actors Access for a full year. James, if you're listening, congratulations. And we will also alert you through our Facebook page to let you know of your prize.
That is an awesome prize.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, that's Actors Access is a great service. You mentioned it earlier, Maxwell, what Breakdown Services has done for actors, and I think Actors Access is one of the primary ones because people can submit themselves, you know, for
Absolutely.
Some project. So,
Can I?
Please do.
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is an Emmy Award winner who was also nominated for a Tony Award in 1960 for Five Finger Exercise as Best Featured Actress. She has stated that the highlight of her film career was the film Avanti, directed by Billy Wilder, in which she starred with Jack Lemmon and was nominated for a Golden Globe Award for the role. Her best-known role in her career for television began in 1970 when she starred in the American television series Nanny and the Professor, for which she received another Golden Globe nomination. Most recently, she was seen on Hot in Cleveland and is going to be doing another episode, we understand, in October, and is currently on work on the feature Lucky Stiff. Please welcome the legendary Juliet Mills.
How are you? Thank you. Hello.
How are you?
Hello.
Good, thank you.
Okay, so I got to ask you, before we get to you, because you mentioned, are you honest with him when you critique the work? Are you brutally honest? Do you edit yourself at all?
Well, I don't know about brutally, tactfully, honest.
Tactfully. Tactfully. Oh, I'm writing that down.
Yeah.
Tactfully so, honest.
Yes, but I have to give my truthful opinion.
Okay.
And it's always good. It's always wonderful, marvelous, but there's sometimes things that I see.
Yeah.
You know, that I could, that can be constructive.
Well, you know, it's just by virtue of being together for 30 years, you see, you might see a little more of the bag of tricks than other people might.
Might.
Well, yeah. And yeah. Also, you come from such rich, you know, heritage with your father and also with your sister being in the business, Haley. And what better kind of observations could you possibly come from, you know, that kind of stock? And,
yes,
and
well, it's a family business.
And it is.
Always,
it certainly was.
You know, giving each other tips and notes and encouragement and and criticism sometimes.
You know what? And I have to tell you before we go any further, I really had a very big crush on you. He got to you first, but a very big crush on you and your sister. And it was just thrilling for me to finally work with Maxwell and have the opportunity of meeting you several years ago when we did Lemonade out of the Tamarin Theater in Hollywood. But
And Michael's no
and
schlock.
And your dear father.
And Michael's no schlock. He dated Sally Fields.
That's true. You know, that's true.
There's these great promo shots of Michael on that's a date true. With Sally Fields from when was it? I mean, you have to tell me the year, but it was like you mailed in or something?
You know what? I remember the show, The Dating Game.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first. I was an actor at the time, but I was the first boy to ever pick a girl. And I did the pilot for Chuck Barris, who was the producer of the show.
Wow.
And I said I would only do it on the condition, I'm throwing my weight around it at 18, if Sally Field could do the show. And they said, yeah. Well, that's impossible. She's on her show, Gidget. She's very busy. And they put the whole thing together because of that. And then they told the audience before, you know, the show actually started that I had written this letter. That's how they put it to them. And we'll see what happens, you know. And, of course, when the girl opened her mouth, I knew exactly who it was. So I was I wasn't stupid. I pretended like I didn't, but I did. Yeah.
So, Julie, Michael mentioned Hot in Cleveland earlier. And you were Jane. It was Jane Leaves' mother that you played on it? And
she's so lovely.
That had
Jane
to be a ball.
It was. It was fun. It was a bit strange because I was on Skype. I was in England. Well, I wasn't really in England, but I was playing her mother, who was in England.
Okay.
So my whole part was on Skype.
Oh, really?
I was getting drunk with Betty White on Skype.
Oh. Oh, man.
They're a great group, those women. And they the show's very good and very funny, and I believe I'm going to be... I think I'll be in real life this time.
Now, when you shot it with them there and you just...
I was in the studio, but just sitting there in front of a camera.
Okay.
So I appeared on Skype.
So are you Skyping again when you come back?
No, I think I'm actually...
Oh, they flew. Yeah. She brought you over. She brought you over the pond, as it were. Oh, that's a hysterical show.
I'm looking at her speaking to you, Paul, and you are just as beautiful... as you have always been.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. That's very... Oh, you were talking to her.
You? No, talking to Miss Mills.
No, really. Juliet and Sally Fields, you're talking about iconic beauties from the 70s.
Indeed.
And
yeah.
And they endure. And Juliet actually did the Hot in Cleveland episode at CBS Radford, where she toiled away for several years on Passions.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. That's right.
And frankly, subsidized my theatrical career in New York during that time, I must say.
I think you were doing Passions at the time Maxwell did Lemonade.
Yes,
am I correct?
Was.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she bankrolled that show. I was going to put it more tactfully.
That's one of the pleasures of having a regular job.
Well said,
a regular job in the business, you know.
Right.
And, to go to New York and work off Broadway, you really have to have some mentor.
Patroness.
Live in New York.
Oh, you do. It's true.
I always say the same thing. People always ask me if I, you know, because I've lived in New York and I've lived in Chicago and I live here, and they say, "Where do you want to live?" I said, "I want to live in New York if someone else is paying for it."
Yeah, exactly.
I'll live in New York on someone else's dime as long as. Actually, I'll live anywhere on someone else. I'll live in Sheboygan on someone else's dime. It's just that New York is better.
Juliet, may I ask you a question, not dissimilar from what I started to ask Maxwell with regard to his success on television in the Colbys and Dynasty. And did you know at the time that you took the job of being Nanny and the Professor that was going to be something that was going to kind of catapult your, you know, television fame to a different level? I mean, you'd come from other places here. You'd come
from
the film.
No, I didn't really. I was pretty naive. I was doing a play in London at the time called She Stoops to Conquer.
Oh, I love that
comedy
play.
With Tom Courtney. And I did a test in London and I got the part. And it was quite a dilemma for me, actually, to decide whether to come and do the show or not. But my father was very encouraging, and he persuaded me that because I was leaving a theatrical career in London, at a time when I was getting lots of wonderful classical parts and et cetera. And I didn't know anybody in California, and I didn't realize quite what a series, what it would do. You know, I didn't really know. And of course, it was very successful, and it did change my life, really, because I became a recognizable name here in America.
Well, of course, in the spinoff on the series being Mary Poppins-like, you know, certainly helped it as well. You know, just the fame of Mary Poppins. I know that I watched it, and I loved it then.
Well, you know, you remember that theme music, the lyrics to that song?
I don't.
You know, soft and sweet, wise and wonderful. They got it right. Hollywood does tend to cast people right on the money. And I tell you, they got it right in Juliet's case.
Phoebe Figalilli.
I was astounded to find out, because I watched the show too. I remember the show well. And I was astounded to find out that it was only, what, 2 or 3 years that it was on the
air?
Three years, yeah. Which it just astounded me, because, now you would never see that in syndication. And you know, I mean, what's the minimum number of episodes to get something out there?
I'm not certain, Paul, but it's got to be probably somewhere around 8 or 9
that
years.
But that one I loved. I loved that one. I loved Courtship of Eddie's Father was one of my favorites also of that time. Yep. Wasn't a big Bewitched fan. I found Bewitched to be a little silly. And then Annie and Professor was a smarter show.
I liked her doing the nose thing.
What? Well, everyone did cocaine in the 70s, Mike. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Bad boy, Paul.
Hey, if anyone can get away with a nose joke, it's me. Okay?
I thought you were going to say a nose job.
A nose job. Thank you. Wait, Michael, you got to give me more time to get
there. There you go. Okay. All right. But that kind of TV, you know, it's, and now they have, of course, look where we are. We're in 2012. That was back in, when was that? In the 70s, right. Yeah. Okay. And what do we have on TV now? We have reality shows about nannies who are horrible people and or Beverly Hills nannies. Mm. And that's where we've come with television. And quite frankly, I know there's good TV on TV, but there's more bad TV on TV because they said this reality thing would never last.
Well, the best work is on the cable stations. In truth, I mean, indeed. Most of the great writers are gravitating to TV because the studios aren't making shooting their scripts.
And it's becoming an issue too, where people are abandoning anyone who's sick of the dreck as you and I are with the reality garbage. Yeah. Is that a lot of us, I know Monica and I are doing this, my wife Monica and I, we're abandoning cable completely and we're just going to Netflix and we're going to Apple TV, because then you can just make your selections, you know exactly what you're watching. I mean, the last 6 hours of television that Monica and I watched was all Downton Abbey. You know, it was just like just one after the other, which, you know, it's just it really allows you to just select what you want. And then, you know, and at the end of the day, you're paying less per month than you are for cable. That's just so much of the time just this pipeline of sewage that's coming into your house.
Yeah, it's pretty much a glut on TV. So pick and choose carefully. Don't spend too much time in front of that TV screen. Get out to the theater, ladies and gentlemen.
That's it.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that always our message, is to get out to the live arts. And one more time, we're going to give a little plug for Maxwell's show, Miss Mills' husband. And he, of course, is in Helen. And that is at the gorgeous Getty Villa. And performances are officially are in previews right now. They open September 6th through the 29th at 8 p.m. with previews, as I said, this weekend, August 30th through September 1st. Tickets are modestly priced, I might say, $42. Top ticket price? What the heck? Anybody can... You buy a pizza for $42, right?
Previews half price this weekend.
Oh, that's right. Half price. Thank you for that. And you simply call 310-440-7300 or go online to getty.edu. But back to you, Juliet.
Juliet, I wanted to ask you something, because you worked in one film, you worked with two of my heroes. You worked with Jack Lemmon and you worked with Billy Wilder. And I'm just curious about... because I've seen so much about people who've worked with Billy Wilder, and I've always thought of a consummate actor's director and comedic actor's director, and I'm just wondering what your experience in working with him was like, and if you could, you know, I don't even know specifically what it is I'm asking you, more for you to just share the experience.
working with those two heavyweights was a gift. Jack Lemmon, as the most generous actor, was the most generous actor. He made everything fun. We just had a wonderful time together. And Billy Wilder, well, he's everything that you could possibly imagine. He's the funniest, wittiest man I've ever met in my life.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not that he told jokes all the time. It's his sort of perception of life. Right. His observations of people that were so funny.
Right.
And working with him, he loved his work. He always wrote entirely his scripts. So everything was, there was no changing anything.
Right.
He knew exactly what he wanted, and he knew when he got it.
Right.
We rehearsed a lot, which was wonderful, and you didn't always in those days rehearse films. We rehearsed a lot. And his set was a happy set, but he was a taskmaster too. He expected people to do their jobs and to know their lines and to be on time, and you know that's why he had such terrible trouble with Marilyn Monroe, because she was never on time and kept him waiting for hours, and he used to talk about that. That was a very difficult time for him.
I would imagine so. Yeah. I would imagine so.
Didn't you say he used to play music before you wrote the film?
Yes, he did. He used that, what they did in silent movies. It was a sort of a hangover from that. Is that he would play music, ostensibly music that had been written for the film, or some, in our case, you know, it was set in Italy, the film, Avanti. And so he'd play Italian folk songs or...
For the environment. Yeah,
on the set, which is often very noisy and bustling and this and that. And I've never worked with another director that used music to create an atmosphere, to create a mood. And he did that. And it was tremendously helpful. I mean, there was a scene that I had in the morgue with Jack Lemmon where we were looking at the bodies of our parents. And it helped so much to have that music, and everybody was very quiet and respectful, walking around quietly. So when it came time for the cameras to roll, you were there.
Right. Centered you.
Centered you. Yeah.
Wow. It wasn't like being on a Michael Bay movie.
It would be very zen-like, I would imagine. Yes, just sort of like take you right there. Wow, that's fascinating.
Well, he's the greatest director of all time, I think, isn't he? When you really look at the body of work, and then for Juliet to be cast, you know, after a Marilyn Monroe and a Shirley MacLaine, I think it was a wonderful validation, and it does represent a career high for Juliet. But I fully believe there are other heights that she will hit in the coming years.
Billy Wilder, that's one of a kind. He's one of a kind.
The bar set
pretty. And he really took me under his wing, and he saw me in the play I did when I was 16 called Five Finger Exercise. And he came round afterwards and he said, we'll work together one day. And we did. He offered me that film. I didn't read for it or anything. He just asked me to come and meet him at the studio at Goldwyn, the then Goldwyn Studios, and I.A.L. Diamond was there, his co-writer, and he just said, you know, this is your part. You want to do it? There's just one catch. You've got to put on 35 pounds.
Oh, my.
And I said, oh, anything for you, Dave. I didn't know quite how difficult that was going to be.
Wow. Yeah, on a 5'2" frame. Yeah.
I just stuffed myself for months.
Holy cow. They say that it's more difficult to gain it than to lose it.
Not
to lose it after you've gained it, but if anyone who's had that battle.
I just got sick of eating, you know, feeling full all the time, like it just was Christmas.
By the end, you the last 5 pounds you put on drinking Carlsberg special brew with your dad, the lager.
Yeah. I was on my way from L.A. to Rome, where we shot the film, and on location, of course, in beautiful places. And I was still 5 pounds under what I promised to, you know. So I stopped off in London to see my father and mother. And I said, he's going to weigh me. I'm at 30 pounds more. I wore this red dress, knitted dress. I looked like a Michelin tire. Anyway, Daddy said, I know what will do it. He said, Carlsberg special brew. So we were pissed for a week. The two of us. He put it on with me.
Well, the great thing you have about the beer, is that you not only have the calories, but you also have the fact that the alcohol stops your metabolism dead. You know, just like everything you eat when you drink beer just gets stored because it's got to work off the thing. I was reminded of something when you were talking about Lemon and Jack Lemmon and Billy Wilder. Rhett, I saw an interview with Jack Lemmon, and he talked about the bit at the end of Some Like It Hot, where he's talking about getting married, and he's so excited about getting married, and he's got the castanets, and he's just sort of dancing around the room because he's so giddy about getting married. And he described how brilliant Billy Wilder was, because that wasn't initially an idea, the idea of him playing castanets, but the jokes and the rhythm, the cadence of them were so tight and were so on top of one another that Billy Wilder was like, we got to give people an opportunity to laugh. So take these castanets and then after, you know, punctuate each one with this little castanet dance, and you watch it now and it's just perfect comic economy. It's just like there's a laugh and you get a little recovery time. Jack Lemmon plays the little castanet, or not the castanets, maracas. I keep saying castanets, but I mean maracas. But it's just brilliant, just so seemingly minor, but just so, you know, just great direction.
Yes, well, that's him. I mean, he edited as he went along. He was also a great editor, and so he knew exactly where he was going to cut as he shot.
Yeah.
So he never shot miles of film, you know.
Right.
He knew exactly what it
was. Well, you had that great gift working with him, that when you have the director and the writer together, you have that universality of vision. You know he's going to direct what he wrote the way he wants it to be told, and it's, you know, it can be good and it can be bad. When you have someone not as gifted as him, it can be a little myopic, but then when you have someone with his gifts, it's a joy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indeed.
It has come to that time of the program where we have a special thing that we do with our guests. Every guest has to go through this. It's kind of a passage of rite, I suppose. Is that it?
Yes, you could
rite
play
of it. Passage.
Yeah, rite of passage.
It's there very simple. We're going to ask you to recall for us, in your wonderful, interesting careers, the most embarrassing or awkward moment you ever had on a stage or on a film set or on television, but something that has always, you know, stayed in the...
A comical performance disaster, if you have
perhaps
one that
something that just
pops,
was so
pops
unordinary
into your memory. But as Michael said, in your experience, anything
well,
that happened
I haven't had a comical disaster. I've had a couple of disasters stayed in my mind.
Oh.
Well, one of which was that I did this play, Peter Schaffer's play Five Finger Exercise, for so long. We all did, because in those days you had run of the play contract, and in London we played it for 18 months before we went to New York.
Oh my gosh.
And after doing a play that long and just saying the same lines every, you know, 8 times a week.
And you were 16 at the time?
Yeah. I was 17 and a half when I went to New York.
Wow.
It was like boot camp. You get to a stage where you can't remember the lines because you can't keep your focus on the line. You know it so well that you're almost like a robot.
Because they become sounds rather than words.
Yeah. And so your mind wanders and you go off.
Right.
You know, and you think about what you're going to have for dinner or what you do tomorrow or whatever.
Right.
And then you come back to it and you don't know where you are. And that happened to me once so badly that... the actor playing with me was sort of giving me the cue because he knew I'd write, and he gave me the... And it meant nothing. I didn't know what he was talking about.
Wow.
I didn't know who I was, who he was, or anything. Oh. And I started to call him by his own name instead of the character's name. And
it was so
frightening that actually I fainted dead away.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my.
And I had
to
bring the curtain down, and I was off for 3 weeks with mental exhaustion.
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
it was just like so anxiety.
It was like such panic and such anxiety. I suppose there was nothing else to do, really. Just sort of pass out.
Like shut
yet
yeah,
you
the,
still
the body
Tony
just
Award
shut down.
Yes, I did.
And what were you, 18 at that point?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I would have loved to have seen you in the show, right?
It was a wonderful play. Jessica Tandy played her mother I played her daughter in New York.
That was the 18 winning a Tony Award.
Win one, I have to say. I was nominated.
Oh, nominated. Well, that's,
I didn't win
that's,
it. But still, that's pretty good to be nominated.
Absolutely. Maxwell, do you have one for us before we got about a minute?
Very quickly. I'm going to have to follow with the same kind of a story. It's what we all dread, is suddenly just going up. Absolutely being not knowing where you are and your costume turning into a personal sauna bath and it's bizarre. It just gets black. You can see is this sort of a ring of white light around you and actors looking at you rather strangely and you don't even hear what they're saying. But Juliet was confronting it during a period where she's going through undergoing hormonal change. So I don't have any such a similar excuse when for my most recent incident, which was in New York last year doing Cactus Flower, except that I hadn't seen Juliet for 3 weeks and I was very enthusiastic upon seeing her that night and the next morning and then went off to rehearsal to perform that evening and decided to walk for some reason from the Upper West Side down to Midtown and stop off and have a swim as well. And I forgot to eat. And very early on in the performance that night, I just, practically the first line out of my mouth, I think I did get a bum cue from my fellow actor, but I did not know what was going to happen. I just couldn't. I was a real humana moment, you know. And suddenly one of the actresses flew on stage. I was playing the dentist in the show, and one of my patients comes on. I said, "What are you doing here?" And she was trying to rescue me, and she was no use. Then the leading lady.
Who are you?
Who are you,
Brett? The master of the ad lib.
Really? But fortunately, the rock of the show, the female, the lead of the show, who plays the receptionist in the part, she came barreling on and saved my hide. Just, I don't know what she did. She sat me down behind my desk, poured me a glass of water. But it was alluded to in the review the next day. It was the night before we opened. And I think it was, the guy described this as a scene from Noises Off.
So you asked for a comical story.
I know. We told
you a couple of horror stories.
That's okay. We are so out of time.
We are. But
thank you, Maxwell.
Thank you both. What a pleasure to have both of you here. And just as a quick reminder, it is Euripides' Helen at the Getty Villa. Museum, Getty Villa, off of PCH. Go for the show, but stay for the whole evening.
Right, and tickets 310-440-7300 or online at getty.edu. And don't miss Juliet Mills coming up in Cleveland this season.
Right on.
And we will see you next week. Thank you both.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.